Welcome to the Linden Town Hall for Tuesday, September 19th, 2006. I'm your moderator, Johnny Ming, and joining me is Philip Linden, who will get us started in just a moment. Please send your questions through the Second Life group Linden Town Hall Questions, and if you want to ask a question via Skype, be sure to include your Skype name. Take it away, Philip.
Great. Well, first off, I wish I had my friend Daniel James here with me today, since it's Talk Like a Pirate Day, and I can't quite do the "arr" thing that so many people have become so good at in the last few years, but I think we do need to give a nod to talking like pirates. Maybe we can get some pirate text following along there in world. You know, I brought along a piece of content today that I had found recently that I wanted to show off. And we've got all our, of course, we've got all our scripts and everything turned off here on the Pooley stage. So I'm going to explain the experience I had rather than just doing it. But basically, you know, the other day I was wandering around in World and I ran into a vending machine that was selling this universal translator gadget, and I put it on, and you know, it's a HUD, and I was able to just pick, you know, my language and then basically everybody else's language, and as soon as that was turned on, and you know, just with a couple of clicks on the HUD, everything I said was translated into another language. So a few seconds after I would chat, what I had said would, my little translator would say it again in the language that I wanted it to say it in. And the same thing was true of incoming chat. It would just be translated. I'm sure a lot of people out there in the audience probably have these things as well. But it was just crazy because I realized that the nature of Second Life and the way we do text, it makes it possible for, you know, for the kind of waiting and translation that device, you know, the sort of timing delays that sort of device imposes to work. You know, nobody minds waiting a few seconds because in Second Life, when we're talking with text, everybody waits a few seconds to talk anyway. And so I immediately went to one of the Japanese islands and, you know, turned on Japanese in the translator and started talking to people. And I just have to say it was a totally, you know, just a mind-altering experience that, you know, even though you sometimes had to laugh at the way it translated things, you know, clearly the words weren't exactly the sentences that I had typed, I actually could talk to a bunch of people who, you know, otherwise would have just been, you know, typing kanji on the screen that certainly I couldn't begin to read. And so I think that type of experience, you know, at least as just calling out something I've seen lately in World that I really loved, I mean, that is the kind of thing that I think really stands for what we're doing with Second Life and what it can be, that it can bring people together in a single space, in a lifelike setting, with the sort of capabilities and possibilities that we come to expect from our waking lives, but bring us together in a way where things can be better. And certainly being able to, you know, have a universal translator is an unbelievable example of that possibility. I also think that, as a side note, you know, the one I bought was hooked up to Babelfish, but I know that there are a number of companies, I think even Microsoft and Google, some of the big companies, are working on these translators as well. And it's going to be unbelievable. As that technology improves, people are just going to use, you know, the web connections capabilities of scripted objects to connect to better and better translators. So I was just blown away by that, and I wanted to call that out here at the start. We are now more than 50% international on new users. So more than half of the people signing up, that's about, well, lately it's about 6,000 or 7,000 people a day signing up, are coming from outside the United States. So I think it's, you know, appropriate and, you know, great that we're able to start talking to everybody in different languages. We also are working on and have made big strides. The release last week, as rough as it was, did deliver the second of two phases of XML UI modifications. So we hope to be able to start showing up international, fully localized versions of Second Life as clients within the next few weeks. So stay tuned for that. That'll obviously be a big help. We also need international payment systems, and we've got a lot of work going on there as well. Just to, you know, before we get to the questions today, I wanted to throw out a few other sort of, you know, points, things people have asked about prior to this meeting, or just clarifications. One thing for everybody to understand is that we are growing quite rapidly now, much, much more rapidly than we ever have in the past. And so the company hasn't grown as quickly as the user base has grown. And so obviously there's lots of stuff that we have to, there's lots of challenges we have to face as a company. In the last month, I just took a look, we've grown about 40% in overall registered users. We went from about 530,000 to about 740,000, so about 200,000 new people in the last month. I just for fun took a look and I noticed that 1,481 of those 200,000 new people have already gotten married in Second Life. They already have partners, so I thought that was great. That's more people than we had in almost all of 2003 in terms of total users. The next thing I wanted to talk quickly about, I've gotten a lot of emails, like probably 20 or 25 in the last day or so, talking about people asking this question, hey, you guys have a police blotter and it says that if you hack somebody's account or have their password and log in, you know, you get a warning or a 7-day suspension. Daniel Linden just posted about this in his blog, but that's a understandable but complete misunderstanding. We need to more clearly explain that the information that's in the police blotter. The very few cases that are reported in the police blotter of that sort are cases where they're not real crime cases, where, you know, somebody that had, say, you know, criminally obtained somebody else's account information is using it. Those cases are cases where they're social crimes. Both users are referring to each other and talking about how they were sharing passwords or something, and then something has been stolen. So there are cases where they're fairly infrequent, and there are cases where we've taken a police action on the basis of, you know, trying to work out that kind of a dispute between two people who know each other. Any case where somebody logs in, as you might guess, with a password that was obtained for any criminal reason, we immediately ban those accounts. We don't put them on the police blotter. And, you know, where appropriate, like we've talked about before, we'll turn people over to the authorities. So those cases in the police blotter, we're gonna make that more clear. I think in general we need to make the police blotter easier to understand what's going on there. But those are not cases in any way related to security breaches or anybody phishing or anybody doing actual criminal obtaining of account information. So we wanted to clear that up. Related to that, we do continue to be quite aggressive about banning and criminal reporting associated with grid attacks. We actually just banned around 60 accounts that were related to the grid attack that we had yesterday. So I just wanted to pass that on. We're obviously very careful about privacy, but I do want everybody to understand that we are as aggressive as we could possibly be about shutting down accounts when there are cases where people are obviously attacking Second Life and trying to keep other people from being able to use it. The missing textures that have been a problem since last week's release, the final fixes on, you know, people having missing avatar textures should be in today or tomorrow. We're doing an optional viewer release and a rolling grid restart to address that problem. Related to that, people have asked about our QA process. We as a company would sort of beg everyone in the community to keep in mind that we're working on an extremely complex set of requirements that are in building Second Life. They're very difficult to simplify, and the test process associated with that is something that really hasn't been done before. There aren't a lot of good comps in other software development projects, and it's a very difficult testing process, and it's one that I think we've attacked with a lot of positive results. I wanted to describe what our QA process is, though, just in general. We have 8 people at Linden Lab that work in the QA, on the QA team. In comparison, we have about 28 software developers. So that ratio is one that, you know, people can comment on. Obviously, there's lots of different thinking about what the right ratio of QA team to developers is, but that seems like a good ratio for the type of release process that we're doing. We do write unit tests for the developers out there for many of the check-ins that we do in code. We also, on a feature-by-feature basis, write detailed test plans, which are given to QA to execute. As most everybody knows, we do a lot of our full regression testing initially on preview on grids that are not connected to the world. We then invite and happily generally get a large number of end users coming into the preview grid to help us with testing. There are a bunch of users that are actually listed in the credits that help us with the fuller regression testing of the system when we're in preview. And so that's another thing that, you know, we're able to do with Second Life, and we're fortunate to have users to help us with that, you know, most software dev processes can't do. So we actually sort of have an extended testing team on the order of a couple hundred, adding to this core team of 8 people that I mentioned before. So we can take more questions about that as in the Q&A, but I just wanted to give that overview. A quick update on the security problems of last week and the resetting of everyone's passwords and the database intrusion that we reported. We continue to do forensic examination of the disks and the you know, the other equipment that was involved in that attack. I wanted to remind everyone, and I've said this in the press, we've talked about this a few times before, we don't actually know whether any user data was taken. We probably never will know. It might be possible that we'd turn up forensic data and looking at those disks that would help us understand, but we're working on that, but the most likely outcome is that we simply won't know whether information was taken. There's no smoking gun. We don't have a file or a deleted file that shows us what information was examined or downloaded from our site. So the person who attacked our site could have been looking at the website source code. They could have been looking at the database. We just don't know. As soon as we knew that a live person was actually able to get in using the exploit that was discovered, that had been discovered a couple of days earlier, as soon as we knew a person was able to get in, we reset everyone's passwords and made the public notifications that we needed to make and then some about what had happened. Going forward, there are several different things we're doing. We are, one thing we're doing is we're taking a careful look at all our user information that we're storing, and we're asking ourselves, you know, what, if anything, we can permanently delete. And then, in other words, is there anything that we're collecting that we just really don't need to have? In other words, there's no, you know, there's no operational need that we have to keep the information. Some user data we're looking at, we are going to begin protecting in a more secure way, meaning that we're going to more heavily encrypt or restrict access to through, you know, different back-end systems, more sensitive user information. I've said in the press, and I just want to say it here again, I'm super sad that we even created a situation, even if nothing was taken. I'm very saddened that we even risked having access to user information, in particular user information. I'm, you know, more concerned about that than credit cards or other things, although I'm equally, you know, concerned that that happened. But we really do take everyone's anonymity and ability to live another life here very seriously, and we will keep giving more updates in the days to come about what we're doing to harden our security. Any system, any database, any large public-facing system that's changed, that's being updated and upgraded in the way ours is going to have the risk of attack. So we're never going to be able to reduce that to zero, but I think we can do a better job than we've done to date, and we can keep improving what we're doing around securing user data. So that is the update on that. We also all staffed the phones the Monday morning after that, in addition to building some website pages where you could reset your passwords. One of the greatest things I saw was all the Lindens that there was about 40 of us, I believe, that manned the phones. We took several thousand calls that Monday, and I don't think we caused anyone to have to wait for more than about 10 minutes. And then, if I remember, because I was on those phone calls as well, that was only for the first few minutes of the calling queue on Monday morning. So I'm really proud of that. I mean, this is the kind of company where you can just, you know, put up a call for help and you get a ton of people jumping in to help out. So we did that. All told, I believe, amazingly, since the password changes, there are about 223,000 people so far that have updated their passwords. So that's pretty cool. It's a nice nice to see that many people you know, accessing Second Life over just a few days' time. You know, speaking of hundreds of thousands of people, obviously Second Life's a lot bigger than the, you know, first few town halls that many of the people here were actually at. I see a bunch of people in the audience that are definitely the gang that has been at just about every town hall. You know, we're enormously larger than we were before. I know one of the things people are concerned about, especially as all these like real world companies and ideas and just as more and more people come into Second Life, everybody's concerned of, hey, how's Second Life going to change, and are the core things that are appealing and inspiring about Second Life going to go away because it's going to get so much bigger? I'd just like to say that I'm really sure they're not. I'm quite sure that Second Life's magic is going to stay true. And the reason for that is because the physics of Second Life, the rules of it underneath, the way it works, those things are all, you know, from the ground up, they've been designed to allow creativity, self-expression, collaboration, communication, this sort of, you know, strange new world where we've been able to rewrite the laws of physics, rewrite the rules for how things work, to make a place that is better, you know, better for us to do a lot of things together. And one of the things I really love is I think a lot of people out there listening worry that, you know, Linden Lab might make a change, or a particular new user or a new company or something might come in and suddenly that'll all disappear. You know, it'll be the Mall of America or something with all the creativity or all the diversity gone. And that is not possible, because the nature of Second Life is built into its atoms. It's built into the technology. It isn't something that even we as Linden Lab can change. We even if we wanted to, and of course we don't, we love what Second Life stands for and what it has to offer people. But I think what's even more wonderful is just that the very nature of the technology and the way things work here guarantees that it will be this different and more expressive and more free place than the real world. And so I would just like to throw that out there for those who worry that all this growth that's happening is going to change what it's like to be in Second Life. I don't think it will. I think Second Life is going to remain this place of extreme creativity and diversity for a long time to come. I just can't imagine how that would change. Another little point, there was a great thread that was brought up as something to talk about here as to handling lots of avatars in a single space. Right now, as most everybody knows, you really can only have 40 or 50 people in one place, just like the people that are sitting here with me right now here in Pooley at the town hall. The technology of Second Life limits the number of each server can only serve data to so many people. Once that server's overloaded, it slows down, and that's something that lots of people here, you know they know what it feels like. There's a great thread on how to get lots more avatars into a scene. So if somebody really does want to do a rock concert or something and they want to have 1,000 people come to that concert, much like some of the design ideas I think alluded to in Snow Crash, there are a bunch of things we can do to make that happen, and we will. In fact, the ideas that were thrown out in that thread, which are basically just give if there's going to be 1,000 people want to come to one place, just give them each a camera, you know, render the avatars that are on the stage and let everybody else have a camera. That's the right design direction, and it's one that we've thought about quite a bit and one that we'll definitely go in. We've kind of been waiting to see what type of large events people are going to try to build so that we could do the feature design optimally for those types of events. So, you know, it looks like these sort of presentations on stage like we're doing right now or musicians on stage, you know, that's the kind of stuff that's going to be really, you know, be where people are going to want to scale. And so with that fact in mind, we'll do the system design to make that work. I don't have a date on that. Obviously, we're much more concerned about scalability and bugs and just general scaling right now. But we're definitely thinking about it, and we'll definitely be able to create in Second Life situations where there'll be thousands of people, you know, attending one event. The last thing I'd say before we take questions in general is about getting feedback from people. I have observed, and probably those who have read the forums and the blogs probably have observed as well, that as something like Second Life grows, you know, you obviously have a ton of different people in and out of it and lots of people giving feedback. What does tend to happen, though, and this happens, this is a general problem in large-scale public systems, a lot of times the feedback that comes back to us as a company and as a team of designers and people that are operating this, it feels to us sometimes like we're only hearing the negative stuff. We're only hearing negative feedback. Now, it's good to say, well, you know, hey, that's all negative feedback you need to address, and those are bugs you need to fix and things you need to work. But as the designers of Second Life, you know, we're always thinking about the sort of social problems associated with these types of situations. And one of the things I worry about as we grow the company is keeping the feedback between us, you know, us as the designers, developers here, and the user, and the users of Second Life and the developers of content in Second Life. I'd like to keep that communication pathway balanced so that we're hearing both the positives and the negatives. I don't have a specific way to achieve that. I think that moderation schemes that you know, like Slashdot, that kind of bubble up the information that seems to be most relevant to everybody, I guess that's a step in that direction. Certainly the user voting systems we have that allow better thought through specific proposals to get voted on and therefore kind of bubble up, that's certainly a way to get a balanced discussion going. But you know, when I look at the blogs and the forums sometimes, I just am frustrated because I know that the tone of the conversation there and the tone that's directed at us at a company is way more negative than what it should be, or it just reflects a mostly negative slice of the commentary. So I'm kind of open to ideas, you know, now, email, otherwise, from the community. And obviously we have a community here that's building all this stuff, so I suspect there may be people out here who have great ideas about this. I'd love to get the communication pathway more positive, more balanced, because what it'll do is it'll make all of us, you know, keep diving in and reading and jumping on the things that we're hearing. If it's all negative, you just have this problem, and many, many companies have performed poorly under this, where there's so much negativity that everybody just kind of puts their heads down and, you know, closes their eyes and doesn't listen anymore. And we're not going to let that happen. And so I just throw out that ideas about positive feedback are very much welcome. I guess this is a perfect time for that. This is a perfect town hall to talk about positive feedback, given what a tough release we had last week. Last point I'd make about releases, we are going to move over the months to come. We are going to move to a place where we don't need to bring the grid down all at once, and we don't need to force, as much as possible, we don't force people to update at the same time. Long term, that's the only way to get the kind of testing and review time that we need as the technology gets changed. We've got to build a system where the you know, for example, the server code, even the simulator and server code ultimately can be, say, optionally updated by the people who are, say, living on the different estates. We've got to get to that. It's something we internally call a heterogeneous grid, where meaning that the grid itself can run multiple versions. That's something that we've clearly got to get to. It's going to be the large-scale solution to continuing to do rapid software rollouts. And we actually have a lot of work underway to get there. We think we'll probably get there in the next few months. So I wanted to give that update as well. And with that, Johnny, why don't we take some questions and talk? And thanks, everybody, for coming here. And I understand we have something like 1,100 people on the audio stream. So thanks to everybody that's listening in. It's great.
Sure. Last I heard it was 1,148. So,
wow.
I guess we'll start off with a question from Dimitri, and that is looking at the situation from a user standpoint, what is your own personal frustration level with the current huge amount of bugs? Kind of goes back to a couple things you already touched on, but.
You know, as a user, I mean, it frustrates me to death. I'm so upset when I see a feature or a capability or a piece of content that almost works in Second Life. You know, it kills me sometimes to think how close we are, you know, how tangible a real working future is for this stuff. And yet, you know, still there's one last thing or there's one clumsy bit of the UI or there's one bug or one crash that's kind of keeping us away from that. And it kills me. The only thing I'd say is that when it seems to me as an architect and a software developer and a CEO that when people take a look at these problems, they kind of will often hammer on a broad category of the problem that it's probably not related to. You know, people will say, well, you don't have the right people working on the problem, when it's just evident that that's not the case. We do have the right people working on the problem. Or they'll say, you have the wrong development process. If you just used, you know, development process X, why, all your troubles would go away. And again, I think that there are tremendous opportunities in investigating and using different types of processes. But I actually think for a lot of the Second Life stuff, we're just faced with the fact that it's a very complex system. And a lot of that complexity is pretty irreducible. Big things like estates and permissions and the different ways that you can, you know, sculpt a prim and combine things together to create content. Those complexities are fairly irreducible. And so there's a certain, we don't know until we're doing it how much QA and how large a team will be required to get this stuff working. I'm delighted that this is something that is so demographically broad. You know, it's going to appeal to so many people worldwide. We're going to be able to put huge numbers of people, as developers and a testing team and a design team on this project. That's, you know, one of the things that's inspiring. Not only are we going to be able to grow this company to be, I think, you know, as big as we'd like it to be or as big as we feel it needs to be, but, you know, through opening up more of our technology, you know, more of the protocols, more of the systems, we're going to get thousands and thousands and tens of thousands of people working on this that don't work for Linden Lab, and that's going to be even better. So I think at some point, when we look back a few years from now, we're going to say, wow, you know, that was a 500-person project in Linden Lab. You know, they had 25. I don't think we're really going to look back and say, Linden Lab, they used all the wrong processes and they hired the wrong people. I just don't think we're going to say that. I think we're just going to say, man, that was way too small a company for the size of the project they were working on. And, you know, I think that's fair and it's okay and it doesn't make me want to work on it any less.
Great. The next question is actually an audio Skype question from Lewis Nerd. Lewis, are you there?
Hello.
Hello, Lewis.
Hello.
Hey. Good to talk to you.
Yes, Skype works. It's a miracle.
Sometimes.
Well, it works for the moment. Don't hold your breath.
I have a question about feature voting.
Okay.
I believe that when a proposal reaches 500 votes, it gets an acknowledgement. Is that correct?
I don't think so. We've never set a numeric threshold that I'm aware of. We acknowledge things. We've got several people that are able to, a bunch of us that write those acknowledgements and read through the lists. And to my knowledge, what everybody's doing is just picking up on the things that are logically either things that we can add some value to, typing comments on, or just, you know, things that seem like the next approachable thing on the list. Certainly the number of votes is a huge issue in terms of prioritizing it, but on the acknowledgement, there's not a specific threshold.
Right. Proposition 1781 is a vote of 785 votes of people asking to bring back the forums. We do not like the blogs. The blogs do not work. Many of us feel that we have been ignored completely by the killing of the forums, and I just wonder why Linden Lab went ahead with the proposal to kill the forums when there was a great deal of negativity about the closure.
Well, I'll give you my answer for it, but I bet Jessica and Robin and, you know, others that are here could probably jump in and would jump in and talk about it. We can't just run forums and let, as a company, and let everybody say whatever they want on them without moderation. The reason for that, obviously, is that the fighting, when people do get in debates on forums, they'll ultimately escalate into either serious terms of service violations or criminal violations, you know, like disclosing First Life information about each other. And so as a result, if we're running those forums ourselves, we do need to read many or most of the posts. The process of choosing moderation below that point, you know, is one that is so hotly debated and frankly is so depressing for the people who actually have to do the moderation that we just don't really feel as a company, at least at a company at the size we're at right now, that we can afford to demotivate the people who have to participate in that moderation. And our attempts to have residents moderate the forums have not yet been successful, nor might I add, I think, have they been successful for many public forums. So I don't think that – I agree with you. I love forums, and I think the way they're asynchronous and the way they're multi-threaded is a very powerful way to communicate. But I simply don't know how to solve the moderation problem. Nobody here does. We're just floored by the impossibility of moderating it in a way that makes everybody happy and makes them thank us and, you know, praise the type of moderation we're doing and gets information to us in a way that's not so depressing that we don't even want to read it.
I can understand it being negative and depressing, and yes, some people do just go on there to flame troll and what have you. A lot of that may be connected to unverified accounts, but I'll leave that for another day.
Sure.
The problem I feel with the blog is that I post comments, they may be 7, 8, 9 hours before they appear. I don't know if they've even been approved. It's impossible to follow a conversation, and it's a one-way thing. I don't like blogs, and many people don't like blogs, and we want the forums back because we enjoy them. I would hasten to wonder whether Tawley's announcement today about the opening of a residents' questions and answers forum is actually an admission that the blogs don't work and that the forums are very necessary.
I think if we can make the forums work, they're additive to blogs. There's no question about that. But like I said, the problem is I've got we have a team of 100 people here where nobody wants to go close to those things because it's something at which it seems we can only fail in terms of doing that actual moderation. But I agree with you. I think it's a good point. I'm not happy with the fact that we can't run every type of communication, you know, blogs, forums, wikis in parallel, and let people use it. So maybe if we can come up with a way to do it or come up with a way to moderate it that works, we'll do that in the future. I don't think that Tawley putting a new category in is indicative of, you know, anything other than just trying to basically, finer grain the categories there.
I did actually spend an hour with Robin a few months ago sharing my experience of moderating another MMORPG forum. I gave a lot of useful advice, and I'm sure there are many others that would love to help get the forums into a condition that makes Linden Lab happy and makes the residents happy as well.
Well, copy me on the email, so I'll get in the discussion here too. I mean, I've definitely been watching this. Maybe we can figure out a way to do it that works for us, but we're definitely not going to do it if we Like I say, if it's something that's totally demotivating and a failure relative to the people that have to be a part of staffing it. But thanks, Lewis.
Not a problem. Thank you. Yep. Bye.
Our next caller is Daneth. Are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes.
All right. Hello, Philip, and thank you for doing this. Really do appreciate
Hi.
It.
Yeah.
I had a quick question about the user count. We're over 600,000 now. The interesting question to me is, how many of those are alts? How many real users do we have?
Yeah, we actually took a look at that. The percentage of alt accounts is a pretty small percentage on the system. I remember it was less than, say, 20% when I looked at it quite some time ago. I think we took a look just a couple days ago at the number of alt registrations. We had a couple of huge days, strangely, actually, following the security problem, probably just because press had been so strong. And it was a very small percentage, like close to 5% or something, even after the password invalidation, where presumably some people were just creating new accounts because, you know, they couldn't remember their passwords, that were actually, you could tell they were, you know, tied back to existing accounts. So my belief is that the aggregate number of alts in the system is, I don't know right off the top of my head what the exact number is. I'll take a look and see if we can publish something, but I think it's in the sort of 20% or less category on those overall accounts. It's a good question, though.
What I perceive, though, is that, for example, if I do a search for someone and I get a list of names, I'll see an awful lot of names where someone has been registered in, say, the past few days, and has no information, just kind of a blank profile. And it seems like there's a lot of those. That's why
But one thing I've observed, and, you know, we've seen this as we've watched people try to get their footing in Second Life, that's usually the state that people's, you know, profiles are in for, you know, a week or so after they get in. So I'd say it's probably hard to distinguish between alts and, you know, newbies who are just casually approaching this and trying to figure out what's going on.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you.
Cool. Thanks for calling.
All right. Our next question is a text question, and this is from Giggs. And the question is, emails to the support email address seem to go into a black hole. What is being done to track the support emails that get lost or ignored, and is there a plan to improve that?
You know, to answer that correctly, there's a lot of emails that go into support with a lot of different types. I'd have to know, maybe we can follow up on this, maybe we can get an IM clarification on this. The question would be, what particular, what were you asking for in that support email? Because different types of questions go into different queues depending on who's handling them. In general, our response time, I believe, on support issues that we can deal with is quite good. I think there are other cases where we're not doing a good enough job telling somebody, hey, this is something that we can't provide support for. I think that we need to do a better job of just saying that. You know, I think if as a company, one thing we're probably guilty of sometimes is that we're all big Second Life users and we're all so passionate about making all this stuff work, and it's all so new that we want it to work, and we will sometimes be too enthusiastic about promising our time or our capabilities when, you know, we can't actually do something. And I think with some of the support queues, we probably could turn it around quicker and say, there's just nothing we can do, or I don't understand, or I need more data. But if the person who asked that question IMs us during the session here and clarifies, that'd be cool.
The next caller is Zeus. I believe he's calling in from India.
Yeah. Hi, can you hear me?
Wow. Yeah, we can hear you. You're calling from India?
Yeah. Hi, Philip.
Hi. That's great.
It's 4:30 in the morning here, so, you know, you can figure it out. So it's two questions, actually. First is, I want to know what Lin Lab is doing specifically to promote Second Life, if anything, in Asia and specifically India, because most of the residents right now are Americans and are Europeans. So that, and the second question was, although I understand that Second Life is getting there are legitimate concerns regarding privacy and crowding by real life companies in Second Life. I, as a small business owner, I own a company, co-own a company called Job Finder here. Would like to know how you and Lindell Lab specifically see SL panning out as a business platform in the future, because that's of a big importance to me and the business community here as well.
Well, first of all, before I answer the questions, let me say that if you'd care to, especially after staying up till 4:30 in the morning to talk, it would be a delight if you, as a user in India with obviously lots of experience about what's going on there, if you want to send me an email to chat a little bit more about, I'd love to just ask you some questions
sure.
about you know your thoughts about using Second Life in India. You know, my email for everybody is Philip, Philip at secondlife.com. Send me something and we can chat a little bit. So on the questions. Let's see. Your last question was using Second Life as a business platform.
Right.
You know, clearly, one of the things we've always said about Second Life is that new mediums like this in general are always used for play first, and that was true with instant messaging. It was true with email. It was true with the web. It was true with television. A lot of people out there probably know this kind of cool stuff, but you know, TV yeah. got its start with wrestling. You know, that was what really put television on the map. Was the sort of precursor to the WWF and Gorgeous George. You know, just coming up with the ridiculous idea of doing basically what's professional wrestling today on TV, and that was what really made TV take off in New York. I think that new technologies like this are always used for play initially because people don't trust these types of people don't trust new technologies, so they initially only entrust their whimsy and their maybe a little bit of art, a little bit of socialization, and you know, those kinds of things. So that's the same thing that's happening with Second Life. What's happening now that we're the size that we are is I think we're starting to get into that section of the curve where people are coming to trust that there's something here. It's not going away. There's a lot of people here. And as a result, we're starting to see real business and education and non-entertainment related applications start to happen. So our goal is to, as a level playing field, enable as much of that stuff as we possibly can. So we definitely want you to come and do business in Second Life. And as I said earlier, I don't think that changes the character of Second Life at all, because it's just, Second Life is inherently kind of what it is, and I think it's going to stay that way for a long time. The first part of your question was about expansion generally in Asia.
Promotion.
Okay. Right. So there's a couple pieces to that. We've hired one person and are looking to hire one or two more in mm-hmm. Asia. We have done probably 20 or 30 meetings with companies that could help us get into the Asian markets. We're still thinking a lot about exactly how to do that. We're very respectful of the fact, you know, obviously, Second Life being what it is, that knowing how to make Second Life work and helping it get started organically in another country can have an entirely different set of, you know, likely conditions and things you need to do well than, say, was true here in the United States, where we obviously kind of at least understand the nature of organic growth and, you know, we're all the users. So we're trying to be smart and listen, but we are moving quite aggressively now. We have we do have thousands of users, many thousands of users in Asia. Off the top of my head, I think the largest user base is Japan. And that's one that we're definitely trying to get to take off. So there's a bunch of stuff underway. We also need to make the payment systems work. And again, we're in discussions there, so you should see us moving on that as quickly as we can. There's a ton of different payment systems that need to be made to work. And as you know, in every market and country, the nature of those systems is incredibly different. There's almost nothing standard or common about them. So we need to get that working. And as I mentioned at the beginning of the discussion, we're very close to having international versions of our client. So that'll help a lot. So I don't know if that's a good answer, but that's a good brain.
Just as a corollary to what you mentioned, when when you say different clients for the international market, you mean just as for the user interface per se. They'll be logging into Second Life.
You'll still be logging into the one Second Life, absolutely.
Right.
And our mission going forward is there's only one contiguous Second Life. I mean, that's what's so exciting about it. We're going to totally stick with that. We don't have any plans of launching Second Life as like a separate, you know, server platform somewhere else.
In which case, I think the charm of it would be lost anyways, because this is like one big metaverse where people are supposed to come and meet from different demographics. And I think it makes sense that, I mean, off the top of my head, I think Japan, South Korea, China, and India would be, Philippines probably would be target markets, you know, where you could probably promote Second Life because it has a large constituency of English-speaking people, and that helps because, that's the de facto lingua franca at the moment of Second Life, and you know, so conversing with other people and so on becomes much easier. Yeah, well, thanks a lot, Philip, and that's about it.
Thank you, and do please send me an email. That'd be great.
I will definitely email you.
Thank you.
Thanks. See ya.
All right, our next question is from Cage Seraph. This is a very serious question. Philip, if SL bugs were insects, what species would they be?
Oh, man, I love that. I think they'd be like, they'd be ants, you know. They'd be numerous and, you know, stretching out along a line into infinity and crawling all over me, you know. That's the... You know, little itchy ants. There's just so many little pieces to getting this stuff right. You know, I so wish that there was like one big ghastly technical problem that we had to solve, because that's what we do very well. It's just that we had a great board meeting the other day, and Mitch Kapor, you know, our chairman and you know, big investor and, you know, just huge believer in what we're doing and all around big thinker and great guy, he was saying, We're faced with insurmountable opportunity. I think that was a great characterization.
That's a good way to put it.
Feels like. Yeah, he said, we have insurmountable opportunity here.
Jessica says, epic. Our next question comes from Johannesson. Johannesson, are you there?
Yep, I'm here.
All right, ask away.
I have a question about griefers, which I'm sure everyone would like to hear about. But more specifically, the abuse report system.
Okay.
How do abuse reports actually get to, say, disposable griefer accounts?
Wait a minute. I'm not sure I understand that. How do abuse reports get to disposable griefer accounts? How do you mean?
Yeah. Say so. It's with the removal of credit card verification. It's very simple for someone to create an account within 5 minutes without an email. And then they go to a sim, they bring their freebie automatic weapons, they raise hell, you can abuse report them. But before they can be banned or anything, they've abandoned the account.
Right, right. Well, first of all, first of all, I'm going to be evasive in my answer to this, but it's for a good technical reason, which is we look at as much as we can to establish when they're, you know, to basically establish who's accessing us. So when somebody does create an account and we ban that account, it does have the effect of banning more broadly than just that account. And we have a bunch of ways of tracking and correlating that data internally here. They're fairly sophisticated. And again, I don't want to jump into all the stuff we do because it'll just make it easy for the bad people to try and work around it. None of these things are perfect, but we do a fairly good job of doing that. I have to say, though, that just like the internet, and this is sort of the second part of the answer, ultimately, just like the internet, you don't get to decide who comes and browses your website. We're going to have the same thing with Second Life. You're not ultimately going to get to decide at some level whether somebody can try to come, you know, visit you in Second Life. What you are going to be able to do, like the internet, is have a very rich set of capabilities regarding who you wish to allow to have access to certain content. And that's where we're trying to go with parcel and estate controls on Banning and being able to make sweeping statements like, I don't want to allow anybody onto my land that has not paid something, you know, and therefore used a registered method of payment and presumably significantly, you know, increase the confidence that they're a individual that's, you know, going to stick around for a while and has a continuous identity across different accounts. So the second piece of the answer is we're going to give you as much power as we can to decide what you want to be able to do and not do with respect to people that come into Second Life. So I hope that's helpful.
It is, in a way.
It's not a, you know what, it's, I know, you're laughing, I have to laugh too. It's, you know, these are hard problems. I mean, is that a perfect solution? No. You know, are there more aggressive things we could do? Probably. You know, we're doing everything we can do for the priorities that we think are right as a development team. Again, you know, there's around about 40 of us overall in the, you know, the testing and development group. We're doing doing things as quickly as we can. But I do think long term it is possible to get this stuff right in the same way that the internet has. In other words, I think it's possible to give the people that own the land and control the content an adequate set of tools to manage who can come and go. And what that means is that the market, in a sense, the statistical market of all settings on all pieces of land will help us find out, you know, what the right solution, if you will, is here. So
all right.
Thanks for the call.
All right.
Next question is a text question from Celine. And the question is, when will the permissions bugs be fixed so I can reopen my business? And why isn't more being done about griefers?
On that one, why isn't more being done about griefers? I think I just answered as best I could. On the permission system being fixed, I'm wondering there which particular aspect of it we're talking about. We are working on some – there's a host of different things that we're working on related to permissions. But I'm, of course, wondering if this is one of those questions about texture copying, which unfortunately is something that we've discussed before is probably going to happen. Well, I think there are a couple of things on the permission system that you may be talking about there in that question. One which we definitely are, you know, have on the agenda and are working on, and I believe have done some development work on toward completion on this, is better date stamping assets that go into the system so that users can more easily establish amongst themselves whether a certain asset, you know, who the first person who uploaded it was. That's something that will help user sort of against user disputes regarding copyright and other violations. So that is something that we're working on. So that's as much answer as I think I can usefully give without more data on that question.
All right. Our next question is from Prokofi. Prokofi, are you there?
Yes, I am. Hi.
All right. Ask away.
Hey.
Hi, Philip. How are you doing?
Hello. I'm great.
Hi.
Good to hear from you.
Well, a lot of what is driving this whole enchilada is the idea that you need to reach a million subscribers. And this, it's commonly said on all the blogs and everything that your venture capitalists are posing this task to you. Is that really the case? And is there another way for them to measure progress besides these sheer masses, which are, you know, me and my alts, really? And whether you could be looking at, like, the GNP, you know, like, you know, are we at the level of a Malawi or a Belarus, you know? And, you know, could we look at the world's GNP as a marker of progress instead of these sheer numbers, which are, you
yeah.
know, all kinds of weird stuff?
That's a great question. In fact, the board and the investors are probably less interested in the overall user count than anyone else. I think that...
Then where does this come from? This is the received wisdom.
I don't know where the wisdom was received from. Well, you know what? I tell you, I know where it comes from. It's just that everybody pressed me on when we'd have a million users, whatever it was, a couple years ago, because it was just such a staggering thought when we had 1,000 users, you know? And what I said back then was, we will get to a million users in, I think, 2007. I wanted to say that.
2006.
I don't think I said.
Oh no! I mean, you'll reach them now in 2006.
I think I said right exactly. I think I said 3 years, and I think I said that in early. I bet I said it in early 2004. So we're a little ahead of schedule. But, you know, the point I was making back then, and the reason that I think I focused on a million, because I think it's my fault probably, you know, I said it and then people have talked about it a lot. I wanted everybody to understand what a big thing this was in terms of its capabilities and its appeal to people. Because if you look back to when I said that, when we all talked about that, probably at a town hall, I bet we had this conversation at a town hall back then.
Yes.
You know, everybody still thought of this as a like some sort of strange mutation of an a more pig, an online game.
Right.
And I just always couldn't stand that because it's so much more. And so I was always quick to say, hey, it's going to be a million people because after that it's going to be 10 million. You know, maybe someday it'll be 100 million. The reason being that it's something that's appealing to everybody. It's not just a narrow experience nor, you know, appealing to a narrow audience. When the board and the investors look at what we're doing, actually, to your point, that we actually do look at the economy. We do look at the gross national product or gross domestic product of the economy. We also just look at, you know, how much money we're making and how as a company we can get the, you know, get profitable, make enough money to be sustainable so that we're moving forward in the black, basically. So that's the biggest thing that we think about. And frankly, we're going to get there easily. It's not really a big factor. It's not something that anybody's losing sleep over right now. What we're losing sleep over is just doing the right things, prioritizing work on the technology in the best way that obviously is, you know, we can't make everybody happy, but we can, you know, we can do our best. And we'd better do a good job of that rather than a bad one. Those are the kinds of things we think about. We do not at this point really worry about that growth or about the total number of users. I would say, because I started thinking this when you first started asking the question, but I don't think it was the question you meant to ask. You know, some people out there, and I've said this before and we'll say it again, come to us and say, hey, you know, I want Second Life to be small. You know, I want it to just be for my community, or I want it to just be, you know, it's optimal with 100,000 people. Doesn't it feel great? And I have to agree, you know, there have been scales where Second Life felt incredibly compelling, you know, and it was just like being a part of this amazing, you know, little village that you were sitting in the middle of. Unfortunately, my passion is to change the world with what we're doing. And that isn't going to happen unless it reaches a lot of people. If you talk to people in Second Life, and, you know, Proc, you probably know this better than anybody. If you talk to a lot of people in Second Life, what you realize I found lately that's really inspiring is a lot of the people in Second Life have less, in my opinion, like depth with computers or inherent sort of Silicon Valley early adopter tech smarts than even people using, I don't know, you know, Flickr or something. So it's inspiring to think that we've built something here where if we can get the bugs out of it and if we can get the UI to work really well, it probably can reach a broader set of people than use the internet today. I mean, in some ways, it gets beyond the language barrier in a way that the text-based internet just can't do.
Oh, I definitely want it to be big as you want it to be as anyone. But I think it can be big and be a country and not just be a viewmaster and a page that you flip over the internet and don't value. I think it can have value, and that GNP reflects that value.
And let me just say that, you know, your words about that subject and, you know, everybody else's, those are things that those are the kinds of things that I wouldn't say I lose sleep about them, but they're the things I think about every day. And I agree with you. It's got to be a country. Its magic is in its community. We've got to make sure that the fundamental, you know, rules, both rules of community and rules of physics, if you will, remain true to make that possible. I you know, let me just say it, you know, here, I absolutely, that is something that is, it keeps me coming to work. If Second Life wasn't a place that had this magical, empowering, communal, creative aspect at its core, I wouldn't come to work. I wouldn't come to work. So thanks, Proc.
Thanks.
Yep. Take care.
Question is from Z, and they say, first, a big thank you for recent Linux support. And their question is, will we see more technical articles on the blog, like the one about baked textures?
We definitely will. I heard great feedback on that, and I've independently heard a bunch of people send the same feedback. So we've got a development team that loves to talk about what is going on. So we'll definitely drive toward more detailed blog postings about the technology. Sometimes we probably obviously we just haven't done enough of that. It's great that we've gotten so much positive feedback on it. So yes, I'll pass that along.
I think our next caller's on the line. Is it Jipin or Jipin?
Hello.
I'm here.
All right.
Cool.
Ask away.
All right. My name's Jipin. I'm from Second Life. I'm curious about what Linden Labs does about suggestions from the community about technical issues to improve Second Life. There's been some really interesting discussions in the Scripters of SL group lately about how to improve the grid and just user analysis of where the strong and weak points are in Second Life. And I was wondering just how to get that information to the right people to see just how feasible some of them are.
Well, first off, we read all that stuff pretty heavily. I shouldn't say heavily. There's more data in the forums than for the number of people we have here at the company we can read all the time. But things like the scripting forums, not in general, other technical forums, do get a lot of reading. Remember that a lot of our core developers were Second Life users before we hired them. So we tend to get a lot of feedback via forum and email and other discussions with users. The user voting system, we've got somebody right now trying to work on the next set of features for that, you know, to try to improve it and make it work better. But that's another system where you can take the kind of information that you see being discussed in that forum and, you know, somebody can put it into that voting system as a proposal that's, you know, well thought through and discussed. And then, you know, the fact that it gets a lot of votes will help that turn it into a feature. But I think in general we're doing a pretty good job of that. I mean, like I say, we've hired some of the most sophisticated scripters in those forums.
Yeah. Actually, what I was more referring to was the Scripters of Second Life group and the chats inside Second Life rather than the actual use of the forums.
Well, okay. So if there's really useful feature ideas or prioritization ideas coming out of that, it probably needs to go into either the voting tool or into the more technical and more readable sections of the real forum. Of the web-based forum.
Any plans to actually introduce a section of the blog or forum where people could just submit technical advice rather than general, hey, wish you'd be able to, I am out of Second Life, actually have a full technical white paper on how it could be accomplished in the system.
You know, I like that idea. I think maybe that's the kind of thing where, and things like this have happened before in Second Life, where it'd be nice to see a group forming, manned, you know, created and controlled by users to do something like that. Probably the best thing to do, and I know some people have made HUD objects and other in-world objects to do this, would be to have live, blogging, threading of stuff that's being talked about, chatted about in-world, you know, pushed up onto a website somewhere. I've seen a bunch of products like that, so that would be the kind of thing that I think we have and would, give a lot of reading time to.
Okay. Thank you. I was just curious on how to give ideas to the right people.
It's great. Thanks for the call.
All right. You have a nice day.
Yep, you too.
Our next question is a text question from Nielena, and the question is, can you give us an estimate about when voice communication will be integrated into Second Life?
No, I can't. I don't have a specific schedule. There are a couple of companies, you know, I think Vivox has done some stuff recently that I just seeing some press flashing by on. There are a couple of companies that are building systems on top of the scripting object system in Second Life. We're still watching what happens with those. There's no question, I think we talked about this at the last town hall, there's no question but that we want to do some kind of we want to do some kind of actually I'm pausing here because Johnny, it looks like there's a lot of I can't hear the audio reports coming in from the gang out there. Let's ask can anyone hear me audio? Type here. You know,
Jessica says it bobbed out for a few people, but it came back. So
okay. So, you know, I still don't have a particular timetable for voice integration. What we talked about last time, and I still think this is the right sort of a plan, is that voice has got to be the kind of thing that is probably like restricted to land or something like that, so that it is less likely to be a tool for social sort of segregation as opposed to a tool for, you know, business or other applications or education. You know, language labs are an amazing possibility for Second Life using voice chat. Those types of things, I think, need to happen in a way that's sensitive to the content and the part of the world you're in, rather than being something that is ubiquitous for all users, because there's a power to text and there is a power to anonymity that is lost with text. You know, we did the first any number of these town halls in text, and sometimes, obviously, I spend a ton of time talking in text to people in world. I don't, you know, want to see that totally disappear, and I think there could be ways in which audio could be implemented which would be so, that would push so hard on us all to just use audio and stop using text that it would lose something in the way Second Life works.
Getting word in right now that it's possible that the internet connection at Linden Lab may have been interrupted. So I'm in the process right now of trying to figure out how we might be able to get them piped back in. Sorry for the inconvenience, everyone. These things happen when you're working with cutting-edge technology. It looks like Philip is back. Hold on.
Hey, Johnny.
Hey, Philip, are you your power's back?
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
No, my power's not back. This is like the funniest thing. I mean, I can only smile at the misfortunes of our adventures here in the last few days. I am actually on an eVideo laptop that somebody in the office has. We just lost. Are we still broadcasting?
Yes, we are. Yeah, I've been singing and dancing for everyone.
Yeah. We just lost all our electric power in at least our building here in San Francisco, and I don't know if it's a broader area. So it's just very fortunate that somebody had an eVideo modem, because we, you know, lost Wi-Fi, internet, and everything, and we all could do really nothing other than laugh at that point. Of course, Second Life isn't down since you're still logged in and everybody else is. Hopefully, which I guess tells us that San Francisco has not lost all its electrical power. But we are dark here in the building, so I'm sitting here on a laptop that looks like it has 95% power, and we're connected right now over the magic of Verizon Wireless's magical eVideo technology. So I will not give up. I don't know if my avatar is still sitting there on World, but if he is, I guess you can push him or something, because he's a zombie at this point.
He's a zombie.
Why don't we take some more questions and run for a bit more here and go from there?
Okay. Well, your voice quality isn't quite as good as it was before, but this is a miracle nonetheless. The MacFisto question was, Philip, can we be expecting you to change the new non-verification process soon? And if so, how long? I'm not sure if you answered that one yet or not.
Now let's see the new non-verification process. I'm not sure that I understand that question. Do you?
I'm wondering if they could be taking the angle that they don't like it and they want you to go back to a verification system. But I know that you guys updated the user profiles to now include verified and non-verified users. So I'm not sure.
That's right. I mean, we're one of the things that's so great about the open registration is that the percentage of people that are using Second Life heavily, you know, say in their first week of use, or buying land, or buying currency, or making friends, those percentages, amazingly, are they're pretty close to what they were before open registration. And so we're so happy with that. That obviously means we can grow the overall world at, you know, three or four times the rate that we were able to before. We're not, our thinking is to continue adding the kind of capabilities that we added with the ability to restrict by land parcel, whether an unverified or a non-paid account is able to come onto your land. We're going to continue to push in the direction of making those sorts of features work really well. We're not planning to go back to requesting some form of verification. Instead, we'll just add these layered ways of verifying yourself. Maybe the question is asking, do we have any immediate plans to add other forms of verification? And the answer there is no, but we are thinking about that stuff.
Okay. Good enough. If you're out there, MacVisto, and want to clarify any of that, by all means, message Adam Linden, and he'll pass it on to us. And the next question is from Wild Honey, and that is, will we get control over who can track us and not all of our friends?
I know I've heard a number of requests for that, for sort of fractioned, you know, invisibility, so you're not... you're able to sort of, you know, be invisible to a group of people with respect to their ability to track you. That's definitely something that we're going to keep working on. So I think you should expect to see further features in that direction. You know, I know for me, sooner than not. I know for me, as a person who wants to kind of work in Second Life sometimes and then just goof around in it at other times, I'd love to have those kind of selective features. So I guess if it means anything that the CEO wants the capability, then you know, hopefully it's something we'll see sooner.
If you have a question, preferably a text question, it's going to be a little more difficult to do a Skype call, and people are actually starting to message me here, so I have a couple here for you.
Okay, great.
If you have a text question, you want to try to squeeze it in, if you're listening out there, text Adam Linden, and he'll get it over to us. Next question is from Joshua Nightshade. And the question is, Philip, I speak for many of the residents when I say that we feel utterly hurt by many of the actions you and Linden Lab have taken recently. In an honest manner, can you outline the roadmap you intend to implement to make sure residents are treated with respect, not double talk, and blog propaganda?
Well, I think there's probably a lot of propaganda in that question. I don't know how to answer something that's that diffuse. I think that a lot of the problems that we've had have stemmed from, as I said, the kind of externalities of growth. We are doing, I think, a good job scaling the technology. I think we have the most open relationship and the most interconnected relationship with the users of Second Life of certainly any software product that I could ever think of in history. The development of Second Life is to an unprecedented degree driven by the interactions that we have with the community. The manner in which we develop it is completely different than the manner in which traditional software projects have been developed. There are some pains associated with that some days, but the overall goal is to engage the community in the development of something that can only really work if the community is deeply involved in building it. So to that question, I just have to say I disagree even with the insinuation that we're somehow not treating users as they should be treated. I think we're the best in the world, and we're working hard at, you know, appropriately putting ourselves in a position where, you know, the future of this thing is only partially up to us and, you know, very much up to the people who are building content in it.
Next question is from the Teen Grid, and the question is, do you have a general idea when Mono may be available for public testing?
That's a good question, Mono for public testing. We've got a couple of additional problems with Mono that I think are related to code verification, but I may be getting a little beyond my depth there without having Corey on the line or sitting in the audience there. I would suspect that we will have things that we can begin testing with soon, whether it's in the next couple of months, I don't know. I'd like to say that was true, but I don't have the team that's working on that giving me a schedule or sitting here in front of me. But we are making good progress. We are pretty close. We do have we have done internal demos of Mono. For those who don't know what Mono is, it's open source version of the Microsoft.NET language, which is an extremely fast replacement for the underlying scripting engine in Second Life. So it's going to allow us to, it's going to allow you, the content creators, to run particularly algorithmically complex scripts, scripted objects, enormously faster than they're currently executing in the simulators. So it should make the world more interactive and interesting. And I think that we're pretty close to having stuff that we can start testing with. Having said that, that's going to be a big transition. So, you know, like I mentioned earlier about partial deployments being the place we have to get to, that'll definitely be an example of somewhere that, you know, first we'll have a mono island and, you know, we'll move very slowly outward from that.
Tink Buttercup asks, are there any plans on adding a business tab to our profiles for those of us who are in business?
I'll just take that and I'll take that feedback back for everybody, a business tab in the profile. I think that we'd probably even like to go less in the direction of sort of tabular segmentation in the profile and more in the direction of just general, you know, maybe HTML support or something like that so that people can really do what they want to do with their profiles. But that's more the vision that I see for the future. But I think that, yeah, enabling business connections and whatnot to be a part of that is a big deal. I would throw out kind of on a random but related topic that we're also doing a lot of thought about naming, you know, so that as businesses come in, they, they're able to. One of the things people have asked us for a long time, and I think we're getting closer to now, you know, getting something working on, is, you know, the ability to say choose their real name if they want to use it as a name in Second Life, and that's something that we're thinking about. Although I think the sort of strategy that we have of hundreds of last names to choose from as a unique name that, you know, gives you a whole new identity is something that we will probably not change for a long time. We really like how that works. It's fun. I enjoy still having, you know the people who have the accounts with the old retired last names. That's got to be one of the coolest things that I've seen come out of Second Life. It's really neat.
Definitely. I don't think there's many Mings left, so let's see.
Not many Mings, not many Omegas, not many Powers.
Right, and definitely, I guess there's still quite a few Midnights, but I guess that's one of the first names that was out. So.
Yep.
Another question from the Teen Grid. For estate owners, are tools like Mac and IP banning in order?
So on the Teen Grid, are different banning tools. The banning tools that we have work the same. Are you the Teen Grid or the Main Grid? There's no difference there.
So do you have like Mac address and IP address banning currently available? I'm not real familiar with those tools.
Yeah, like I said before, this is the one case where I'm just going to be evasive and say that we don't document the ways that we establish uniqueness of connections, because we want to try and keep people who are trying to get around that from having more information about it. But like I say, we do the same stuff on the main grid that we do on the team grid.
Okay. Koso asks, regarding browser on a prim, could we have them on a HUD prim first if concurrent use of an in-world browser is slowing this feature? This would help a lot of bugging. Yeah, this would help a lot of bugging HUD slingers out there.
I think that's actually a really good point, and I had thought about it, and I'll pass that along to the guy who's doing the development work on that. I think a browser on a HUD prim could have aspects to it that was easier to implement earlier, and I think it's a good point. Browser on a prim in world has the challenge that, of course, there can be many, many, many of those in view at one time, and so we have to do these sort of level of detail calculations to make that work right. So I like that point. I will make a note about that and carry that back to the right person.
Sly Axon asks, will sim crossings be improved?
Yes, we've improved the sim crossings. We improved the SIM crossings a couple of releases ago quite a bit, but most of that was coming back from some degradation that we had introduced by changing the way that we package up, you know, you and your avatar and your car or whatever, and pass it over a region boundary. We do think in the future we should be able to get that delay time down to an acceptable, make it so fast that the physics of, say, a vehicle are unimpaired as it moves across a barrier. There's a design around that that we've had for years. We just haven't had the time or the priority to implement it. I do think that, you know, it's obviously inspiring how much people are able to do with vehicles in Second Life. I'm quite confident that we'll be able to get those numbers down to sort of, you know, tens of milliseconds on SIM crossings rather than for very complex objects, the hundreds of milliseconds that you now see. This is one of those examples, though, where we're really letting people do things that are way out, that generate a large number of different performance conditions. You know, if you ride a very simple bicycle across the SIM crossing, you'll see that it is almost unaffected, you know, depending on what kind of roadway you're on. Whereas if you take a spacecraft that has, you know, 1,000 prims, or, you know, the spacecraft has a bunch, and then you as the avatar have, you know, 1,000, you know, prims worth of jewelry attached to you, when you go across the SIM boundary, yes, there's a big hiccup as we move that data. So we always err on the side of letting people kind of do everything and then seeing what comes out of that. This is definitely a painful example of that.
Kiva asks, when will the LSL wiki be going back up?
Ooh, good question. I will try to get an answer for that. When will the LSL wiki go back up?
I think it might already be back up, but I think it was moved. If somebody can verify that, that would be good.
Yeah, I mentioned before that there are several things we're doing in the wake of security problems we had, some of which is changing our back-end processes so that things that are inherently less secure as pieces of software are running on machines that are much more secure relative to access to other data within the system. And so the wiki software would be an example of that, part of that kind of process. But, I mean, the answer's got to be soon because obviously it's good information. So I'm gonna follow that up and see if maybe I can get an answer put back in the blog.
Okay. Lola asks, when can we expect new avatar appearance features and what will they be? And also, how is the speed tree system coming along?
That's a great question. I just saw a wonderful one of our team members sent around a picture of a couple of things that people haven't seen yet, including a shot of some speed tree trees rendered, and it was just amazing looking, amazingly beautiful. So I don't have a specific timeline on that. The we did some exploratory work with speed tree where we got it into the code, but we did that in an experimental branch of code that was also designed to do some of these very long draw images that some people have seen where we're trying to render like all of Second Life at one time, where you can see out, you know, kilometers in the distance. It's just moving to see Second Life rendered that way, but also, you know, moving just to see how low the frame rate is. So the speed tree technology, which for those who don't know is a great improvement to the realism and the detail of trees in the environment. Trees, potentially grasses. That's something we would love to get in. And unfortunately, I don't have a specific timeline on it because I haven't seen it running in internal code where it's in the, you know, more current branches that we're working on right now. But it's something that I definitely like to see happen. So again, just hearing people talk about it, talking about it here is a good, I guess, a kind of a bump, if you will, to us in terms of development priority. It can definitely be done.
Smirk Gorilla is asking, or actually making a statement and asking a question. I'm concerned about real life companies coming into Second Life, such as Adidas making shoes and selling them for 50 lindens. It is undercutting the little guy because they have limited funds, and real life companies have an unfair advantage.
Yeah, I think the challenge there, though, That is a very good question, so let me restate it. You know, are we concerned, or should we as a community be concerned, not just Linden, that, you know, the big companies coming in, and the example of a, you know, big shoe company coming in and selling shoes are going to be able to drive everybody else out of the market because they can, say, sustain a lower price Happily, I don't think that's what drives user preference in Second Life. There's no cost of goods in Second Life, so first of all, there's no economy of scale. So a company like, you know, Nike cannot manufacture, if you will, shoes any cheaper than anybody else in Second Life. So that's one really important thing about this. The second thing is that people crave diversity. Second Life creates this amazing opportunity to be who you want to be and to make the world the way you want to make it. And that capability is a very powerful thing and very inspiring. And I don't think the – oh, gosh. Are you still there, Johnny?
Yeah, I'm
okay,
still
cool.
Here.
Cool. I just had – okay, this is weird. I may lose you and you may have to call me back, but I had Skype on this thing just like crashed. So it's some people I think are trying to call into me and I haven't got my Skype settings set right to not, I guess not allow that when I'm on a conference. What I was saying was I don't think that existing real world companies will be able to, if you will, undercut people who are developing content in Second Life, because the number one thing that we all want when we go to Second Life and we're perfectly willing to pay for it is the kind of diversity and customized content that is so richly created by all the people in Second Life. And I think that I will applaud happily the real world companies that are able to match that level of creativity in their own efforts in Second Life, and I'll bet some of them will be able to do things that none of us as the existing community have ever thought of, but they will have to do those things to be successful. Just being a big company in the real world really does not help you very much in Second Life, and I don't think simple, you know, price undercutting is going to be that material, because people are paying for things as a function of their appeal, not as a function of need. So it's not, you know, the Walmart situation, if you will. Let's take, Johnny, let's take one more question and wrap up. We've been on, I think, for about an hour and a half, and especially given our technical impairment here, our laptop's going to run out of gas.
Sure. Let's see here. Celine asks, will there ever be the ability to back teleport to a previous location by using a simple button on the browser?
I love the idea of a back button. I think it's a great feature. Let me just say that. Yeah, back button or history. There'll definitely be that capability. When we're going to have that capability in, I don't know, because I'm not aware of anybody working on it right now, but it's pretty straightforward. And it's one of those kind of oh duh moments where I think the other day we heard about it probably from a Second Life user for the first time, and we were like, oh, of course, back, just like a browser. So I think fundamentally that makes sense, and you'll see it. I don't know exactly when. So why don't we wrap up? We've probably been at this as long as everybody cares to stay on the audio line. Like you said before, there's been a lot of people listening. I don't know how many have lingered on here till the end of over an hour and a half. But thanks everybody for coming, and thanks to you, Johnny, for hosting this once again.
Sure, no problem. And just a reminder to everybody, this will be available on the SecondLife.com website on the media page under community. It'll be available as a podcast probably within the next couple days.
Great. Thanks, everybody. And we'll me and the one remaining laptop working in the electrically dead Linden Lab world headquarters here. We're all smiling, and we'll get back on as the Lindens as soon as we can. You got a few of us in there, but most of us are just playing with yo-yos and going outside for a walk and doing all the other things that you typically do when all the power gets shut off in your building. So take care.
Thanks, Philip. Talk to you soon.
Talk to you later. All
bye-bye.
Right. Bye-bye.